this is Denise Lee Yan, and welcome to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. The Brand as Business Bites podcast features great stuff for your brain to chew on, including insights and interviews with newsmakers, brand builders, and thought leaders. It's available on iTunes and on my website, DeniseLeeYan.com.
All my life, people have been giving me advice like, don't put off until tomorrow what you can do today, and the early bird gets the worm. So I was very surprised to find a book that seemed to encourage me to procrastinate. The book is called Procrastinate on Purpose, 5 Permissions to Multiply Your Time, and it's written by Rory Vaden. Rory co-founded Southwestern Consulting, a multi-million dollar global consulting practice that has worked with over 7,000 clients in 27 countries to grow their business and provide a better customer experience. Rory is a best-selling, New York Times best-selling author. He calls himself a self-disciplined strategist, and he speaks to audiences around the world about overcoming procrastination and increasing productivity. So here to talk with us today about procrastinating on purpose is Rory Vaden. Welcome, Rory.
Hey, Denise. It's good to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Cool. Well, I loved your book. It was so enlightening, and it caused me to think very differently about my time in many ways. And I particularly liked how in several instances you took a paradigm that usually involved like 2 ideas and introduced a third idea or a third dimension of understanding. So for example, you talk about not managing my time or prioritizing my time, but actually multiplying my time. So explain what you mean by multiplying time.
Yeah, I know it sounds a little bit like hyperbole when you first hear it, like, by permission to multiply your time. Well, that's impossible. And it really isn't. This isn't an over exaggeration. It is an empirical thing of that we have discovered. There is a new type of thinker in the world that has figured out how to multiply time. And to really understand it is to look quickly at a history of time management theory. So era one time management thinking is what was very one-dimensional. We refer to that as managing your time. And the idea was all about efficiency. It was developing tips and tricks, tools and technology to do things faster. It's one-dimensional. And it's not that there's anything wrong with efficiency. It's just that, you know, there's a point of diminishing returns to the efficiency strategy, very well evidenced by the fact that we all carry around computers in our pockets, and yet we never seem to be caught up today when we're moving more efficiently than ever before. The second era of time management thinking emerged in the late 80s, and it was really about prioritizing your time. And it was more about two-dimensional thinking. I give credit a lot to the late Dr. Stephen Covey in 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, introduced this time management matrix where the y-axis was importance and the x-axis was urgency. And Dr. Covey really did change the world because he gave us a different way of thinking about time, which was that we could score our tasks based on their importance and their urgency, and then basically focus first on what matters most to prioritize them. And since, you know, 1989, that's really been the pervasive time management strategy. Until recently, we noticed a new type of thinker emerging, which we refer to as a multiplier, because there's nothing wrong with prioritizing, but it too has an inherent limitation, which is there is nothing about prioritizing in and of itself that creates more time. So all it does is take item number 7 on your to-do list and it bumps it up to number 1, but it doesn't create any more time. So multipliers, these people who figured out how to multiply time, they were making a third calculation in addition to importance and urgency. And that third calculation is what we call significance. And if importance is how much does something matter, and urgency is how soon does something matter, then significance is how long does something matter. And the significance calculation causes us to break free of the traditional paradigm, which is, you know, what we were saying is it's impossible to create time. Well, it is true that it is impossible to create more time inside of the construct of one day, right, Denise? It's like We all have the same 24 hours, 1,440 minutes, 86,400 seconds. There's nothing we can do to create more time. But the significance calculation causes us to break free of that construct and not just think about today, but instead think about tomorrow. And so that brings us to in the premise in one sentence of how you multiply time. The way you multiply time is by giving yourself the emotional permission to spend time on things today that create more time tomorrow.
Wow. Can you give me an example of that, maybe from your own, you know, personal journey on this or work that you've done with an individual corporation? I'm just curious to help people understand significance. What does that look like?
Well, there's millions of examples. Let me give you a fairly ubiquitous one, I think, that everybody will understand that demonstrates the concept pretty clearly. If you ask the average person, do you have 2 hours open in your day today to just set up online bill pay? Most of us would be like, no, I don't have 2 hours today. I don't have 2 hours open any day. Have you seen my calendar? It's jam-packed. And even if I don't have an appointment, I have 1,000 emails that are filled up that I gotta finish. And if I get my emails done, I still have 10 projects that I need to be working on. So it's like I never have time. I never have time to do something like set up online bill pay. Well, multipliers think differently. Because when you make the urgency calculation, you're only thinking inside of the construct of the day. That's how the modern day to-do list is put together. It's what is the most important thing I have to do today? But multipliers reject that type of thinking. Multipliers do not ask themselves the question so much, what is the most important thing I have to do today? What they ask is, what can I do today that will create more time or more results tomorrow? So for them, they don't have 2 hours open in their day either. But what they realize is they say, you know what, if I give myself permission to invest 2 hours to setting up online bill pay, and it saves me 30 minutes a month from paying my bills, every month thereafter, then in just four months' time, I will have broken even on that investment. And every month thereafter, when my bills are being paid automatically, I will be receiving something that we call in the book ROTI, which stands for Return on Time Invested. And so it never makes sense to spend that 2 hours when you're only living in a world of urgency, which is what we live in. We live in a world of frenetic urgency, constant chaos, always ever-changing interruptions and fires and falling victim to latest and loudest. And what multipliers have done is their thinking has evolved to say, you know what, rather than operating by the world's rules of urgency, they are thinking on a different paradigm, which is significance. It's thinking longer term. And when you think longer term, you realize that 2 hours is a great use of time, and I can't afford not to spend that 2 hours, because otherwise, if I spend 30 minutes a month paying my bills, I'm going to spend 6 hours every year doing it, where if I could do it once for 2 hours, it's taken care of. So the significance calculation changes everything.
That's a really helpful example. Now, Rory, one of the things that you said in your explanation is you use the word permission several times. And in fact, in your book title, Procrastinate on Purpose, Five Permissions to Multiply Your Time. Mm-hmm. So in the book, you talk about, you know, that there are five permissions that we need to give ourselves because they lead to five actions that result in multiplying time. And of the five actions, eliminate, automate, delegate, procrastinate, and concentrate, I'm actually most interested in procrastinate because I want people to understand your unique take on this. So let's talk about the permission that I need to give myself that will enable me to procrastinate on purpose.
Yeah. And now people sometimes challenge me. They go, well, wait a minute, Rory, I thought you were like the world's like expert on the psychology of overcoming procrastination. And take the stairs. You said, you know, procrastination is the most expensive invisible cost in business today. It's the foundation of all mediocrity. And take the stairs was like, and now you're telling us to procrastinate on purpose. How does that work? And it's a fair question. And there's an important distinction to make. There is a big difference in waiting to do something that you know you should be doing when you don't feel like doing it versus waiting because you are deciding that now is not the right time. waiting to do something when you know you should be doing it, but you don't feel like doing it. Like not going to the gym because I don't feel like doing it, but I know I need to go. Not making a sales call that I know I need to make, or not filling out a job application because I'm scared of what might happen, or not starting on a project because I'm just overwhelmed at how big it is. Waiting to do something when that you know you should be doing when you don't feel like doing it, that's procrastination. That's a problem. Mm. That's the killer of all success. That's the most expensive invisible cost in business today. And that is what the first book, Take the Stairs, is all about solving. Mm-hmm. However, waiting because you're deciding that now is not the right time, that's not the killer of all success. That is a lost art. That is a virtue. And that word is a synonym for procrastinate on purpose, and the word is patience. It is patience to allow things to wait, to give yourself permission that it doesn't all have to be done this very second. It's what we call in the book the permission of the incomplete. See, the message of the book is not to just all procrastinate. It's basically you have to do the things you know you should be doing even when you don't feel like doing them, which is the same message as Take the Stairs. But this book is about what to do with everything else. And the mistake that many of us are making, myself included, I am the king of this. Like, I was the person who struggled with it, and that's why I wrote the book, is a lot of us have begun, those of us that are chronic, overachieving, taskmaster, checklister do-gooders, we're the ones that struggle with this because we have come to a place where we are putting our value and our self-worth in the volume of tasks that we are completing rather than in the significance of the tasks that we are completing. And what you have to realize is, like, there is doing something early is not the same as creating more time. Doing something early is just taking something from tomorrow and bringing it into today, but then adding the risk of what we call unexpected change cost. The practical example here being, think about booking a flight. So if I have to book a flight and I'm traveling in 6 months, the chronic overachieving taskmaster in me wants to book that flight today because then I can cross it off my list. It's done. I feel good. I get to put a slash on my to-do list, and it's like, look at me. I'm getting stuff done. And yet, anybody who travels a lot knows that very often your travel plans change. And if 30 days out from the trip, my travel plans have changed, now not only do I have to re-spend more time to go in and change my arrangements, but in addition to the extra time of rework, the airline fee is going to charge me a change fee. That is unexpected change cost. It is the cost of rework. And so what happens is the emotion that is happening here, and it took me a long time to realize this, is some of the world's most effective people, like efficient people, the movers and shakers, that's who I'm talking to, right? Take the Stairs was all about solving classic procrastination, but this book is about solving the new type of procrastination, which we refer to as priority dilution. And priority dilution, Denise, is the chronic overachiever's procrastination. What it is we end up doing a whole bunch of small things so that we feel like we're being productive. Meanwhile, we really are living in a constant state of interruption, being pulled away from the significant things that will really create more time or results tomorrow. And so that's a major problem. And the reason why a lot of us do it is, well, there's two reasons. Number one, how we got here, how we got to where we are, was from being the person who always saved the day, from being the person who always worked like crazy and took the weight of the world and stayed up all night and did a million tasks. And that's how we got here. So that's what we know. And a lot of that is driven by a fear of not being good enough. And so we move quickly because we think it'll fill this hole of like my self-worth is tied to the volume of tasks. Well, multipliers give themselves the permission of the incomplete. And they realize that, hey, usually the items in my inbox are not the most significant things in my life. In fact, one multiplier said the inbox is nothing other than a way to prioritize other people's priorities. And so we have to give ourselves the permission of incomplete so that we can procrastinate on purpose with certain things like our inbox, temporarily ignore the small stuff so that we can give ourselves the permission to protect, which is concentrate, to concentrate on the big things. So Procrastinate on Purpose, even though that's the title of the book is really about multiplying your time. And Procrastinate on Purpose is only one of the five strategies, as you alluded to, but it's really a fascinating one.
Well, and I feel like you've just spent the last few minutes talking to me, Rory. So I feel like I just went to go see a counselor. Thank you so much for sharing that. This has been a terrific discussion. How can people learn more about you and your book, or I should say books?
Yeah, well, you know, here's what I would say. The best thing, honestly, give yourself the permission to go to procrastinateonpurpose.com, because here's what we did. We created a free one-hour webinar that I teach. It's recorded, so you can watch it whenever it's convenient. Just go to procrastinateonpurpose.com, and we have this one-hour webinar that explains something we call the focus funnel, which is the visual depiction of the thought process that multipliers use. And some of this stuff is pretty radical, so you have to sit with it for a second. So go to procrastinateonpurpose.com, watch the webinar. Then there's links, you know, you can get links from there to buy the book or my Twitter. Or, you know, I do a weekly podcast and I blog and all that stuff. But if you go to procrastinateonpurpose.com, you can get connected from there.
Great. Well, Rory, thank you for the discussion. Thanks for showing me and my listeners the light. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me, Denise. And, you know, just the other thing to keep in mind and always remember something from Take the Stairs, we call the rent axiom, is that no matter who you are, you just got to remember that success is never owned. Success is only rented, and the rent is due every day.
Great. Thanks for that, Jim.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Denise.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to it on iTunes or through my website, DeniseLeeYon.com. And check out my new best-selling book, What Great Brands Do, the 7 Brand Building Principles That Separate the Best from the Rest. Go to WhatGreatBrandsDo.com. And remember, good is the enemy of great. Greatness is a choice. Choose to be great.